Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connections Thursday edition. Today's date is September 6th, 2007. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith, and we have a great honor to have an economist and a teacher, and turning out to be quite a statesman in his own right here, Paul Craig Roberts, Dr. Roberts, and he has studied a great deal in his life about the economic systems that we are all living under, and I'm sure he has some pearls of wisdom about the future, because I've got to tell you all, today's gold prices, gold futures topped over 700, the dollar's tanking again for its third time down, and housing starts at zero, and all kinds of problems. We are looking at a real across-the-board mess, and I'm going to bring him up right now. Dr. Roberts, are you with me?
Hello.
Hello, Dr. Robertson. It's great to have you here. You know, economics is a field that's not a precise science, and if you read five different economists, you'll often get five different takes on things. But over the last couple of years, I've heard you speak several times about an impending problem in our financial system coming on off of that dot-com bubble that was crazy, and now we've got this mysterious new implosion coming caused by the housing bubble. Could you explain to the listeners what you think's happening and where we're heading with this?
Well, I think what's happening is more dangerous and fundamental than either the dot-com bubble or the current mortgage housing problem.
Mm-hmm.
The power and influence of the United States in the period since the Second World War has been due to the reserve currency role of the United States dollar.
That's right, yeah.
The dollar took over from the British pound, which was worn out by the debt Britain incurred with two world wars, and became the world money. And if... Mm-hmm. When a country's currency is the world money, it means that it's as good as gold, in the sense that other countries accept it as the means of international settlements.
Right.
Dollars can be used to settle trade deficits in any country's trade accounts. It can be used to pay oil bills.
Mm-hmm.
It is the money for the world. Now, what that means for the United States is that we can churn out endless trade and budget deficits and pay people for real goods and services with U.S. dollars because they add them to their reserves, and they see it as an asset that builds their stock of world money. Now, I said endless. It seems that way sometimes, and has been endless for a couple of decades, but
yeah,
it's not really endless. At some point, the portfolios of the rest of the world get so overweighted in dollars, and they see no end to the outpouring of dollars, and they start looking for some way to lighten up their accumulation. It's very difficult for them to reduce their accumulation, but they try to accumulate them at a slower rate.
Well, have they been successful? Because I know Paulson had made a several trips to China, but it seems in spite of his trips of the last week, China is kind of clandestinely starting to divest itself of dollar holdings, and you can see some of the results of that in capital flows back into the United States, and it doesn't look good if they start dumping that $1.3 trillion they've got, and is that an accurate assessment?
Well, you see, all the world has to do is simply, instead of absorbing another $300 billion this year, decide they only want to absorb $200 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And that $100 billion that they don't want this year that we pump out puts pressure on the dollar, and the rest of the world is trying to find some alternative currency. So they go into euros, and so the exchange rate between the dollar and the euro worsens from the dollar standpoint. They go into British pounds, and the pound rises. They go into Canadian dollars, and the Canadian dollar rises. They go into Thai baht, and the currency in Thailand rises. So that has been going on now for several years. So the Chinese don't need to dump $1.3 trillion. They can just say that this year we're going to accumulate less dollar holdings than last year. So unless we reduce the rate at which we're creating these new dollars through trade and budget deficits, the activities on the part of other countries to accumulate fewer means there are more dollars in the market than will clear at the current exchange rate. So the dollar goes down again.
Well, now, we've seen, Dr. Roberts, we've seen that the Fed has opened up the cash window for banks, but we've also seen the Treasury actually at their last auction buying their own debt. That's not a good sign when they put treasuries out for sale in the world market and can only get buyers for 30 or 40% of them, and they turn around and buy 60% themselves. That's kind of like inventing value. I don't understand how they can get away with that.
Well, I was the Assistant Secretary of the United States Treasury during Reagan's first term, and I don't know how the Treasury can buy its own bonds. It doesn't have anything to buy the bonds with. So I don't know what you mean when you say Treasury buys.
Well, when the debt's not taken up by they put a certain amount of treasuries out for sale, and when they're not purchased, they don't get into circulation. In other words, the Fed wants to have a certain amount of debt sold into the world market, and when it's not picked up, for some reason, this money has been showing up on the books as having been sold when it hasn't.
Well, I don't understand. The Treasury doesn't have any money to buy its bonds. I mean, the United States Treasury is in deficit. It's in red ink. So unless the Federal Reserve has begun buying new issues directly from the Treasury, in which case you have right money printing. That means that they're just simply printing money. I didn't know they were doing that.
They certainly are.
If you're sure they're doing that, that is a new development that has gone unremarked in the financial press. I'm not aware of it, but it means then that we are becoming a banana republic, printing money to pay the government's bills. That is a very short-lived phenomenon.
Well, you've studied history, sir, to get to become an expert in the field you're in. And I studied under Professor Bomal at New York University and took economics from him back in many years ago. And he taught me that he taught me a lot about the system as it was printed in books. I've come to understand that the system we live under, the Federal Reserve System, is a great deal different than what my professor explained to me in my classroom. Of course, in my research, I've tried to look into the origins of this very mysterious bank that is private, and what ties to the United States, or what loyalties to the United States the people have to it. And interestingly, I find out that many of the holders of the most important assets within the Fed are foreigners, including Lazard Frere and others. And in fact, it looks like they're investing hugely in China and divesting quickly out of America. And so the best interest of America doesn't seem to be being served by these people. And I'm wondering what your take is on that.
Well, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, because if these private parties have control of the United States Central Bank, then they would do far more for themselves by fostering benevolent policies toward the country whose central bank they control, and would have far less to gain by running that valuable asset into the ground. What I do know is that it has not been the tradition in the United States for the Federal Reserve to purchase new Treasury debt issues when the Treasury is issuing bonds to cover the expenditures of the United States government. The only time the Federal Reserve has purchased Treasury bonds is in its open market operations when it's trying to increase bank reserves.
Yeah.
Right now, it might be buying Treasury bonds from the banks in order to increase their bank reserves, or it may simply change the discount rate like it did not long ago. But I would doubt that the Federal Reserve could purchase new Treasury issues without this alarming the entire financial community all over the world, because they would see it as the reserve currency country.
Well, that has been reported in the press that they did buy that. That was reported, actually, that they did that.
That sounds me, but you would expect the minute they did that, the dollar would be knocked off its reserve currency.
Well, it's at 80 in the basket of currencies, Doctor, and I'm wondering, you know, the 80 point on the basket of currencies that is really the benchmark for the dollar, and it's touching the 80 mark now, which is the lowest low it's ever reached. And many people believe there's a leg down coming that will hit possibly 70 and even 60 in the next couple of years, meaning that the dollar's value will be about half of what a euro's worth. That will mean a disaster for the United States, and I'm wondering, since we don't have any manufacturing to start with, our advantage will really not come in world markets without that kind of export potential. And I see some terrible future coming for the United States, and I'm wondering if you concur with that, or you have a different take on it.
Well, if the dollar loses its reserve currency role, it means the federal government would no longer be able to cover its operations, which includes war, with foreign borrowing. And it would either have to become a banana republic and print money, pay its bills, which would very quickly break out into high rates of open inflation, or it would have to curtail its expenditures and or raise taxes. And given that there's been no growth in real family median income in the 21st century in the United States, raising taxes would be the equivalent of reducing the real incomes of Americans who already can't pay their bills. So in that sense, it would cause a lot of consternation in Washington. They would have to cut back either their war-making or some aspect of the government. It would also mean that the main source of our power in the world would be gone, which is the ability to buy people by giving them dollars, because if it loses its reserve currency role, it's not got the cachet any longer. So that would be a bad thing. It's quite clear that the United States cannot indefinitely consume more than it produces. And currently, we're consuming $800 billion more each year than we produce. And so that $800 billion is financed by foreigners acquiring $800 billion of our assets. And you can't close a trade deficit, as you noted, if you don't have anything to sell because you moved all your manufacturing offshore.
That's right.
So every time you move manufacturing offshore to lower your labor costs and have more profits, you are turning what was formerly American gross domestic product into imports. And so the American national income goes down, imports go up. Now,
that's right.
You can't do that forever, and you can't do it at all unless you're the reserve currency.
Well, see, here's the interesting thing. I mean, we are heading toward losing the reserve currency status. Excuse me. And that reserve currency status also transfers itself into petrodollar and commodity control. You price gold in dollars, you price oil in dollars, and of course we've got saber rattling in Iran against Iran, and Iran saying they want to go to the euro as their use of currency. And I see what you just said in those two little discussions here that we've already had, is that on several fronts, America is in a decline unless we do something rather immediate to pull ourselves out of it. But I'm wondering, sir, is it possible that this is by design to usher in some serious changes in America and absolve the American government of unfunded mandates and return America to a lower level of riches by comparison to other countries such as China and the rest? It seems to me that this is all being done intentionally.
Well, I don't see how rulers gain by undermining their own power.
Well, you would assume that they're working for the people, and what if they're not? What if their interests are some other loyalties?
It's nothing to do with working for people. If they're the rulers, they've got the power, then they wouldn't want to destroy the base of their own power. So I doubt that that's what's happening unless they've gone insane and have decided to commit suicide. And
well, that's not out of the question. I mean, if you take a look at some of the things that are happening in our world, and you've examined them in detail, you'll know that we went in and killed we've killed so far 5 million Iraqis for nothing more than we didn't like them. The administrations didn't. There's no terrorists there. I mean, that's been proven by a lot of people. Government has reports that say there was no reason to go in there. But now we're saber rattling for Iran, and this country has not had an aggressive war against another nation that it started in 1,000 years. And yet we're over there trying to start something with them. I'm wondering, we're hated around the world. I live in France, and I don't tell people I'm an American unless pushed. Because this is becoming dangerous to be an American anywhere in the world. And
these are different sets of problems, but it doesn't relate.
Well, they're translating into the economy, though, is my point. It seems like these all of these problems that we're discussing right now are all being orchestrated in unison. And the goal is to bring America down, and it's been working.
Well, I just have to say that I would find it far-fetched that people who were so entrenched in power would want to destroy the basis of their own power. It'd be like somebody exterminating their own army. So I doubt that. I think it's much more likely that it's a product of hubris and self-righteousness and the feeling that we're invulnerable and that everybody has to do like we tell them or we'll kick their butt. And I think it's mainly that type.
Well, what if the real power was not in the hands of the leadership, but rather in people like Henry Kissinger, and going back to people like Honig and Rothschild and others who are enormously wealthy in this world and never show up on anyone's radar? I'm wondering.
They have no way of issuing any orders, and no one much knows who they are, so they're not likely to have any kind of following. Now, let me come back to the notion of the petrodollars and Iran wanting to be paid in euros. It doesn't make any difference whatsoever whether Iran is paid in dollars or euros or yen or what. They don't care as long as it's a hard currency. And if they don't want to hold dollars, but they're paid in dollars, they can simply accept the dollars that they're paid for oil and turn around and change them into euros. So they don't have to make any to-do about how they're going to price their oil. The fact that the dollar is a reserve currency simply means that the sellers of any product will accept dollars in payment. But they might not accept most currencies, because most currencies aren't hard currencies. That is, they don't have stable values in currency markets. They're just a few. And the reason the dollar is still the reserve currency is that there's not yet a large enough alternative currency to take its place. So even though people are suspect of the dollar's long-term future, and even though they would rather have fewer of them, if they all try to go somewhere else, there's just no room. There's no currencies big enough to take the burden. And so they're kind of stuck with the dollar, and will be until it gets worse. And if we continue to run these trade and budget deficits, it will get worse. And it is true that our big Asian bankers like Japan and China, who we rely on to finance our deficits, it's true it gives them increasing power over us, because when they are your banker, they can affect your interest rate and the value of the currency by their willingness to finance you. And if they become a little less willing, then they can drive up your interest rates or drive down your currency. So we are gradually losing our superpower status as we get more into the grip of our Asian bankers. And indeed, some people are speculating that China, which is opposed to an American attack on Iran, is accumulating fewer dollars in order to put financial pressure on the dollar, in order to make the Bush administration see that there are opponents to the policy that might be prepared to go further. So it's true that these things that our government is doing are working against us. And I think we don't.
Well, have you ever heard the quote, give me control of a nation's money and I care not who makes its laws?
Yes, I've heard this.
But do you know who said that?
I couldn't remember right now, but it's
Baron Edward de Rothschild.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take a look at the ownership of the majority shares in the ECB, the Bank of England, and the Federal Reserve, you'll find out that gentleman and his entourage, including Oppenheimer and others, are really the power brokers in the world through their Bank of International Settlement in Geneva. And financially, I don't see that they have any loyalties to America, and I think that there has been a wholesale transfer of wealth out of the United States into China intentionally through their hands. And I think America is being set up for a fall at the hands of this group, and that's what I believe my research shows me, and it also shows me that in their planning papers that I've read over the last several decades, and I'm wondering if you'd heard anything like that.
Well, I don't agree with that. And the reason I don't agree with it is that I know that shareholders seldom can exercise any control over a corporation which is in the hands of the management. And it's almost impossible for shareholders to affect policy. Second, I know that with the power that the United States government can exercise, it wouldn't tolerate any private parties dictating its policy, much less a Rothschild. And also I know that the reason for the so-called privately owned Federal Reserve is just a cover because of the opposition to a national central bank. The reason the United States history is rife with opposition to a publicly owned central bank. And so when they stuck the Fed in, they concocted the notion that it was somehow privately owned. It was owned by banks. But the bank.
Well, actually, there was a president who instituted a policy, though, back in Andrew Jackson. Andrew Jackson stopped the private bankers from infiltrating the American monetary system, and it remained that way for 70 years. And, the prosperity was great during that period, except when the international bankers who were holding back certain capital investments in the United States had problems with their attempts at trying to take control over the banking system. I've looked into this through history, the historic documents, and the private central banks that are not directly accountable or their books have never been opened ever, and the true ownership has never been disclosed publicly. It's certainly not the system that was envisioned by our founders, and I'm wondering how that squares with what you just said. It doesn't seem to fit very well.
Well, it squares because when the Federal Reserve makes its policy decisions, there's no sign of any of these people. It's made by staff and the governors and chairmen and with input from the Treasury. And I've been in the meetings, and there's nobody else present. Nobody says, well, Baron Rothschild told us we had to do this. And so there's no sign of that, and it would be highly unlikely that a powerful country or government like the United States would have its policy set to its detriment by some private people in Europe or something. It's just not that they would simply, if any such thing existed and had any real reach, they would simply assassinate them or confiscated or whatever. So you have to understand.
You mean like President Kennedy was assassinated by them?
He was assassinated, but I wouldn't have thought it was by the owners of the Fed.
The owners of the Fed own more than. I can give you a little bit that the water systems in the United States, U.S. Filter, owns 60% of the water rights in the United States. That is also a Rothschild company. If you take a look at the other businesses in Europe, they own Electric of France, which is the largest electric producer in the continent. They also just bought Gas de France. They own Suez Lyonnais des Eaux. They own Veolia. If you take a look at the things they control, resources, they set the gold price up until 2004 because they own Barrick and Anglo-American, by and large, through their private holdings, through Warburg and others. These things are not my musings. These are facts, and I've looked into these facts, and I'm wondering how such a shadowy group of people with such enormous resources could be under the radar for so long, and you can see the people working for them in our government. And I can give you names, but I won't bother unless you're interested. But I have direct relationships into our government working, and this conspiracy is not my musings. The history and the evidence points to it, and it's not just me that believes this. There are millions of people who know this, and I'm wondering how that squares with the things you've discovered. I mean, it seems to me that we're talking about a problem that is facing America, and if we don't identify the exact perpetrators of who, of the problem, we're not going to be able to fix it.
Well, you know, I don't think we'll get anywhere by trying to hold some foreign boogeymen as scapegoats instead of holding our own government accountable. It's certainly not going to stop any unnecessary wars
They're not going to start an unnecessary war. That you don't think Iraq is unnecessary?
It is an unnecessary war.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they got another one on the front burner right now in Iran with another thing. What is the American public?
Yeah,
you're not going to stop any
of that by pointing your finger at Baron Rothschild. You have to hold the United States government accountable.
What if you were to find out that the people behind that whole policy came from that group?
Oh well, I suppose I just was too much a part of the system too long to see how it actually works to be able to accept that. It's not the way.
Well, you see, because if eight out of ten Americans don't want us to go into that place and have a war, and the leadership of the country does it anyway, and the man in charge of the Pentagon has been administering, the head of the accounting part of the Pentagon loses $2.6 trillion and can't account for it, and we've got people from a very close-knit group working diligently to have a policy. They call themselves neocons, but they all come from the same group. This is a conspiracy that has validity if you take a look at it, and it's not in the best interest of the American people. It's in the best interest of this small group, and this is the point I'm trying to make.
Does Rothschild own Halliburton and the American Security?
Well, they are heavily invested in the Carlyle Group and Halliburton, and they were very instrumental in Bechtel, and yes, they are in all of those companies in a big way.
So those are the controlling interests?
They are, yes, sir. With Warburg, with Oppenheimer, and others, yes, they are. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Some people call this corporate fascism, but see, I think that that's a scapegoated concept. When you take a look at who's really pulling these strings, it's big money, and it's a group of very small group of people, about 300 people in the world. And they got a lot of stuff started in World War I, II, and now. And it's the same people. It's the same people behind the British monarchy, and it's the same people behind France. And if you take a look at these things and go higher than just the governments themselves, you'll find out that there is a very active group doing this stuff to the world. And I've got the proof of it. I mean, I've got documents of it. I've got firsthand testimony for it. This isn't some guy who thinks that, space aliens are coming. I don't believe anything like that. I need proof to make these kind of assertions.
Well...
I mean, if you only look...
I'm convinced of it, so I don't know what's the point about pursuing that.
Well, no, my point is that it might behoove you to actually give it a moment of your effort to see if there is something there, because if you take a look at the influence of the group I'm discussing right now, and you can see their power in groups like APEC, Anti-Defamation League, Southern Poverty Law, and many others... we're talking about a group that punches way above its weight. And if you start looking at the policies associated with these groups, you'll find out that they're working in a single direction. And it has a lot to do with finance, and it has a lot to do with big business. And once you've made those connections and you start looking who's behind the scenes, it's undeniable. And that's the painful fact, because it's not just undeniable in the United States. It's a group effort that has been going on for some time. And I urge anybody, yourself more than anybody, Dr. Roberts, to give this at least a moment of your time, because it is a real threat.
Well, I can explain the situation without recourse to that, but I suppose all I can really verify is that the dollar's reserve currency role is being undermined by... continuing budget and trade deficits, and that the undermining of that role weakens the United States' position in the world, and sooner or later, the United States will have to put some discipline in place to manage its domestic budget and its international.
Well, the unfunded mandates alone that are coming in the next 10 years are an impossibility for, under present conditions, especially with no manufacturing base. So the bottom line is that even if they tried to put their house in order right now, it would be impossible. There's just no way that they can meet the commitments they've already made. The obligations they've already made are impossible to square. And with us being in a war for the last 4 years that's cost $1.3 trillion of our GDP and another one on the front burner, there's absolutely no possibility that America is going to dig its way out of this. And if you take a look at where these companies that are leaving America en masse are going, they're replanting themselves in the Asian region as well as China. And this is by design, not by accident. And I can promise you that there is a group behind this, and they are orchestrating this, and it has been going on for some time. And people with gravitas such as yourself, if we were to look into this and find out the facts, we may be able to stop it. But I doubt very seriously, unless we can get people to take a look at this seriously, we're just going to fall victim, like Russia did in 1917 and other places in the world. We're heading for the end of the American experiment, and I see it's all financially based, and that's principally why I wanted to speak with you, sir, because I did notice on one interview that you did that you made the connection between certain activities in the Middle East and our blind support for the nation of Israel, and. It's a painful thing to examine, but Ray McGovern, who was actually in the CIA when you were in the Reagan administration, in fact, he was one of the briefers of President Reagan, says that oil, Israel, and land are the reasons why we're over there, and this is folly, but there's more to it than that. It's not just natural resources. There's other reasons for it, geopolitics and the like. I'm wondering if you think, as an elder statesman of the United States with a lot of education, shouldn't we be looking beyond just the leadership and find out what some of the motivations are that are driving the people that are controlling our nation?
Well, I think I know what they are, and I don't need a conspiracy headed by some French Jewish baron. So I can explain it without any recourse.
Well, what would your explanation be for this?
For the Middle East, American involvement?
Yeah.
Right? Is that what you want me to explain?
If you can explain it, I would. Yeah.
We have this involvement because several things all came together. One was the neoconservatives' plan to exercise American hegemony as the sole remaining superpower, and to begin exercising it in an area that would benefit their compatriots, the Israelis. So that was one reason, an French Jacobin type ideology, which began in the Middle East because we thought that would be the easiest, and also not because we thought, because they thought that would be the easiest and also of the most benefit to their Israeli friends, who could then expand territorially without being hindered by independent states. There were only three states in the Middle East that weren't ruled by American puppets, and that was Iraq, Syria, and Iran. So that was one reason. Another reason was when Bush came into office by virtue of a vote of the Supreme Court, one vote of the Supreme Court, he was seen as a very illegitimate president. The Democrats had set him up to be very quickly destroyed and made ineffectual. Then 9/11 pulled the coals out of the fire and let Karl Rove wrap him in the flag, make him invulnerable as a war president, because generally Americans don't support hindrances on their president during time of war. So that was another factor. Then we have Cheney, who was both a neocon and a representative of Halliburton, who saw the great payouts to the military security complex, that a 30-year war would generate. And we had the Republican Federalist Society, who had been trying to accumulate power in the executive for decades. And they saw their chance to use this to accumulate power in the executive. And you had the great bulk of the American people with the impression that we had been attacked, and they wanted to hold somebody accountable. They didn't much care who, just as long as they could smash somebody and have vengeance. And so all that came together, and we got into the Middle East, and it was a miscalculation.
What would happen to your assessment if you were to discover that elements within the American government and several other participants were actually part of the implosion of those buildings? And I can give you one piece of evidence that is definitive in that regard. That is Building 7.
It wouldn't make any difference. Governments have often used false flag operations in order to pursue agendas. That if they took them to the people and said, look, we want to start a war so we can wrap Bush in the flag and save him from the Democrats, and we want to start a war so we can enrich our military-industrial complex friends, and we want to start a war in order to help Israel have territorial expansion, and we want to start a war because the ideologues who staff up the Bush administration believe in American hegemony and they want to exercise it. And if you went and told people that, what would they say? They'd say, you're crazy. Go away.
Well, I know they wouldn't say you're crazy at all. I'd say that you were on the right track with that, in fact.
Yeah, but if you went to the people with that program, nobody would accept it.
No, but I think that's that program that we were just served up. And I think that the 3,000 American deaths in that. Go ahead.
I don't think it was Baron Rothschild.
Let's take a look at that. Let's see if you made a statement, but let's take a look at that. We look at William Crystal and Mr. Pearl and Mr. Ladine and Mr. Fife and Mr. Wormser and Mr. Kagan and all of these people that were working diligently to make this happen all come from the same group. They are all of the same, cut from the same cloth. Their heritage and their religion and their backing for Israel, many of them are dual citizens. And if you take a look at this and you find out that these are the people pushing this policy and that you also find that Israel had its fingerprints all over 9/11, then you start wondering further. And yes, Rothschild can be linked to that, absolutely. And if you want a good history lesson on how Rothschild can be linked to it, take a look at the Turkish implosion under the Ottoman Empire, and how this same group took the Ottoman Empire and dismantled it back at the turn of the last century, and you'll find out that his fingertips were all over that implosion, as they are in this one, and through his agents. And I just gave you a list of some of his agents. I could give you probably 30 more. And so this is the point that I'm trying to make in this interview, that maybe if you dug a little deeper on some of this, you might find out that it's actually the rot is much worse than you're guessing at.
Well, you know, the neocons are a very small percentage of the Jews, and the vast majority of the Jews don't support them. And so there's no...
That fact is belied by the acquiescence of our Congress in all of these in criminal actions. And if you take a look at who runs the Democrat Party, you're going to find Rahm Emanuel behind it.
It's a well-known fact that AIPAC speaks for very few of the American Jews, that the vast majority of them are opposed, and that even George Soros was thinking about forming a counter-organization.
But
AIPAC has a lot of influence, mainly because it's able to muster campaign donations.
Yes, but Mearsheimer and Walter did a very good book on that, good paper on that as well.
Yeah. But if you just look at the votes, most Jewish people vote Democratic.
Yes, but you have to understand this, that the Democrat Party's leadership is in the same hands. Take a look at the man named Rahm Emanuel. If you take a look at the Republican Party, it's a man named Melman. This is not, I'm not some conspiracy whack here. The fact of the matter is we've got 1.2% of our population ensconced at 70% in government.
We could do about it because we have no way to hold Baron Rothschild accountable. And
no, but we can put the kibosh on his agents, can't we?
There's nothing we could do about it anyhow. So
well, couldn't we stop his agents from their activities?
How are you going to do that? It sounds to me.
Well, it's coming, and I got to tell you, the American public are finding this out. Dr. Roberts, I got to tell you, the American public is finding out these facts, and I don't know where you are on that learning curve, but the American public is well advanced into this learning curve if you take a look at it. And
no,
the facts that I just shared with you,
the American public, they're all evangelical Zionists, rapture evangelicals, Bush supporters. They're not on any learning curve.
They are.
Information.
Well, I'll give you an example of the learning curve. Maybe this will help you to see it more clearly. Zionism as a word, if you put it in your search engine about 5 years ago, it got 1,700 hits. Zionism today, and it's most 90% negative, it gets 6 to 8 million hits. And so, yes, there is an awakening happening across the globe as to the machinations of the
Jews themselves are opposed to Zionism.
Yes, I understand that, but their leadership is not.
What leadership?
Of the Jewish community.
Jewish organizations, and many of them are opposed to Zionism. In fact,
only one that I can think of, and that happens to be Yotura Carta.
Said it was a schism and dismissed it. So, I really think that we haven't. I'm not prepared to discuss the Jewish conspiracy because I don't think I need that to explain it.
I can only ask you, and you have your own interests. But I ask you maybe to give it a fair reading and possibly just examine the information as you would a Mearsheimer and Waltz book, and as you would listen to a man who was at the Paris signing of the armistice after World War I, who was there with Morgenthau, Brandeis, and the rest, including a man named Benjamin Friedman.
Look, just because the Israel lobby is influential and can cause the United States government to behave in ways that are not in our best interest, that, I think, is true. But to go from there to say that the Israel lobby is the manifestation of some secret conspiracy run by whoever, Baron Rothschild, to destroy us is different. Why in the world would somebody who had all that power and all that investment and control over America want to destroy it? He wouldn't.
Well, that's...
He would be getting richer and richer. He would make Bill Gates look like a pauper.
Well, why would they have done? Why would 5,000?
No one has that kind of power.
But yes, they do. Yes, they do, Dr. Roberts. If you take a look at the,
it's diffused.
But Dr. Roberts, if you take a look at the Russian,
a lot of bad guys on one side before anything can happen, and even there, they run up against things they can't control, like Russia and China. So the world is not like that. It's we make it.
Well, if you take a look. If you take a look at the
blaming Baron Rothschild,
I'm not blaming Baron Rothschild. I'm
making ourselves.
He's an element. He's only an element in this, sir. I don't believe that
we're making our own mess. We don't need them to make this mess for us. We're making it ourselves. And if we blame them, then that's a good way of never addressing the problem. We can blame people who we can't do anything about. So,
if it were that simple, I would agree with you, but I think it's quite more complicated than that. I think.
This is an American problem.
It's actually a global problem. It's a global problem. It's a global problem. And the same elements are in constant power here in France as well,
listen,
under Mr. Sarkozy.
I don't know why we're arguing about this, because it's
pointless. Well, let's agree to disagree then. Let's agree to disagree, and we can leave it at that. I do want to thank you, sir, for your time, because I do believe that this was interesting to find out your take on many of these issues. I understand that you have a different agreement.
I'm not blaming somebody else. I'm blaming us. We're the reason. We're the problem. We have.
I think we're letting it happen. Yes, you're right. We're letting it happen. But
we're the problem,
yeah.
Right here.
We're letting it happen. You're right.
We're doing
it. I think you're right.
Nobody's making us do it. We're doing it because we're stupid and self-righteous and full of hubris. And that's the American problem, and that's what we're doing. And I've enjoyed this and hope it's of some use to your audience.
It has, my friend, and I thank you so much for your time, sir.
So long.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, this was Dr. Roberts, Paul Craig Roberts, the interview with him. He, of course, has a different view on almost every issue we talked about, but that doesn't mean I can't respect him for his opinions. Of course, I do respect everybody if they have an opinion they truly believe in. So I want to thank him as well as you listeners for tuning into this broadcast. My name again is Daryl Bradford Smith, and I want to thank you all for listening to The French Connection. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, be well. Bye-bye now.